Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome to the PI World webinar on Thursday, the 22nd of October, 2020. And I'm delighted to be here today with Andy Brough, who heads up the UK and European small cap and mid cap team at Schroders, and Richard Leonard, who joint runs a family office. Thank you both very much for joining us. So tell us the difference between, perhaps Richard start, telling us the difference between running a family office compared to Andy running a fund.
I'm in a very simplistic world. I'm no longer in fund management, so to speak. I went for the alternative career that I've done for the last 10 years, and I don't have any red tape. I don't have committees to go to. I don't have reports, annual reports, etc. I just focus on one thing, stock picking. So I might write some notes, as you can see them here. And so I just simply focus on stocks. That's all I do.
Yeah, I think, you know, Lenny's got, you know, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. And, you know, you can go anywhere in the market to do that. You know, we are measured quarterly, monthly, yearly against a specific benchmark. And so you have to look at the stocks within that benchmark and invest accordingly. So we're typically guided by the all-share indices, be it 250, small cap. And, you know, AIM is something which is on the side for us. We do play an AIM, but it's not part of the overall indices. And so you're taking a different sort of risk profile in a fund, potentially, compared to what Richard does. You know, so I envy, you know, the freedoms he has, yeah. And he probably envies, not, you know, must envy some part of my life, mustn't he?
I envy your shirt.
So where do you think we're at in terms of, you know, we've got Brexit going on, we've got COVID and lockdown returning again, and we've got US elections. Is it a time to be fully invested, or where do you think we're at?
It's quite interesting. I was talking to my go-to economist, and, you know, we're trying to look at certain points. You know, wages in September were higher than they were in February. You know, actually, the tax receipts from employed people, not self-employed, is flat year on year. You know, all these pointers, when you looked at the news, you'd be going, the world's about to end. You know, used car prices are up 9%. House prices are still going up. So, you know, people kind of forget that because the pandemic struck so quickly, we're still in mourning for our old way of life. You know, we still want that coffee from Costa and the line called tuna bagel baguette from, you know, Pret. But, you know, what capitalism does, it destroys what it's already created and builds something else. And I think, you know, if people sort of realise that's what's happening with the pandemic and they get used to it and this period of mourning passes, then I think there's going to be a whole raft of new opportunities out there.
And where do you see opportunities?
I agree very much with what Andy said there. You know, and the future's coming, that's for sure. And I'll touch on that later. What we do know is that at the beginning of January, the 20th of January, we will have a new president of the United States, likely to be Biden, but maybe Trump. Maybe Trump gets re-elected. Maybe. I doubt it. And that will happen because it's in their constitution. There will be a trade transaction with Europe for choice. But if there isn't, again, we'll know about it. It will be a no deal, no transaction. But the likelihood is we get a trade deal. So once we get over those hurdles, then I think we will be in a very good place because the market will be able to measure it and those uncertainties will go away. There'll be other uncertainties to think about. And clearly COVID is at play at the moment. But again, I believe in that the human spirit will tackle COVID and it will be via testing and treatment. And therefore, at that point, again, the economic cycle, the business cycle that I talked about last time when we met, will have the chance to kick in. And kick in at speed because it will be on drugs. You've got all that QE out there, point one, and then point two, you haven't had the fiscal lasagna to come. That will come on top and they will get the unemployed back to work. The doom and gloom in the papers, that's what they sell. They sell doom and gloom. Stock markets need to look beyond that. And the UK is, I've never known the UK to be as cheap as it is today.
One of the problems with the media is they haven't had a crisis for a long time. You know, I was talking to some media people and they said, what you've got to understand, Andy, is they don't want to ask tough questions because they haven't had anything like this since the Falkland War. So no one wants to let the side down. And they want to keep it going. And fear, you know, this fear factor. It's quite interesting just looking at the bond market. I was looking at the UK 2050 gilt auction. Negative, people are, you know, bidding negative rates. Mm. You know, in Europe, their bonds, they had 223 billion euros of demand for something which was like 17 billion. Mm. And you think, that's a lot of money, just touching on what Lenny said. So as soon as that fear factor starts abating and people go, actually, yeah, why am I buying negative bonds? Actually, then I'm going to get negative interest rates because that's going to follow from negative bonds. What am I going to do with my money? And I better go and buy some equities that can cope with this new world that's going on, which are hopefully going to, A, go up in value, but B, hopefully pay me a rising stream of dividends from a rising stream of earnings that can fund my lifestyle.
And the bond market is almost certainly a false market for choice. What do I mean by that? Negative rates. You've got negative rates on French bonds, French oats. Yeah, about 30 basis points. In Germany, they're 50. In the UK, you're getting a quarter of a percent on 10-year gilts, and it's maybe 80 and a bit on US treasuries. And there has to be a risk of inflation. And bond markets are almost certainly being artificially massaged with huge dollops and dollops and more dollops of QE. So at some juncture, that's going to be tested. And it will almost certainly be tested because of one thing, and it's called inflation.
So for both of you, a time to be fully invested.
I think, would I be fully invested? I mean, personally, I'm sort of run about a 70-30 at the split at the moment, 70 in equities, 30 in cash. Mainly because my job is actually geared into the market as well. So if I'm all in, then, you know, I really am doubly all in. So, but I'm more of a buyer of choice. You know, the last thing I did was buy the investment trust, small cap, mid cap investment trust. I don't tend to actually play personally in individual shares. I do that through the funds.
And would you say 100% invested? Or
yes, if you remember in early March, the world had never seen, you know, COVID. And, you know, I got very frightened, I got scared, and I ran away because that was what generally I was taught to do if you don't know what's going on. And I went to 90% cash. Now, I made huge mistakes in that. Mm. I sold some great companies like Telecom Plus, which I think Andy owns, to be fair, and 888, for example, and I shouldn't have, but I did. But it gave me a clean piece of paper, and I agree with Andy through the other side of this with the amount of stimulus that we will see and the valuation levels on top. And that's why, going back to 8 weeks ago when we last spoke, I strongly believe in the business cycle, and we are at the start of the business cycle. If we're not at the start of the business cycle, then we really are in trouble. But I certainly wouldn't be owning government bonds on a negative yield. You know, you're better to put your cash under your pillow or under the mattress. But to be fair, I'm almost certainly think my wife will still find it.
So where are you finding opportunities? Which companies are you looking at?
I'm still bullish on those three companies that we talked about last time. Polar Capital had good trading update. You've seen consistent upgrades. Yep. The valuation is still cheap as chips. We've made a little bit of money since we last spoke. I'm ultra bullish on Ready still. More upgrades to come. Residual values, which we were talking about previously earlier with Andy, you know, continue to go up. And so I'm very bullish on Ready, Northgate, the van hire business, and that's my largest holding. I'm still bullish on UP, Ultimate Products, and they report next week, and I expect them to be good results, and I expect further upgrades and around being at home. And there is a change in the environment out there, and that's ultimately what I'm looking for, alongside the opportunity that we see on the business cycle. And that's sort of where I'm looking at. And I'm looking for companies that are well run, strong management, strong market positions, pricing power, and structural growth. And that's what I'm talking about today. On top of, and lastly, the theme that I don't think yet has been attached into the marketplace, I believe there will be an urge to merge. I believe that there will be a huge amount of M&A activity. After all, there is so much cash out there to find a home, and it's not in the bond market. It will almost certainly be attracted into the equity market, and there's huge mountains of cash with the private equity firms.
So what presents an opportunity in that sphere?
Well, I'll touch on the first one. The first one is, and I suspect Andy will find this somewhat, I believe you own it, to be fair, using that theme of urge to merge, I'm looking at McFarland, which is a packaging distribution company. Beautifully run, extremely well run, overly prudent. So prudent that the finance director uses his earnings per share after the deduction of goodwill. And that's how prudently run they are. No debt on the balance sheet. You know I don't particularly like debt. Generates cash, and it's got fantastic market positions. And these guys design and package, and where the structural growth is clearly online. So they deal with people like Halfords. They deal with Dunelm. It doesn't take a brain of Britain to work out that Dunelm were doing very well. We've just seen upgrade after upgrade. And Halfords are the right place to be because people like Andy are cycling all of the time and they want to own more than one bicycle.
I'll let you into a little secret, Lenny. You can only ride one bike at a time.
That's true. But I suspect you have more than one bike. And their skill is designing packaging, and they do a whole network around the UK. So they've got a fantastic market position, generate cash. But more importantly, the numbers are just simply wrong. They're just simply wrong. And the broker to the company have not got realistic forecasts in the marketplace. Going back to what I talked about last time, I like to interrogate the forecasts, the analyst numbers out there. And there's only one forecast out there, and that's the broker's forecast. And they're wrong. And they are continuing to perform in positive territory month on month. For July, for August, for September. And so the likely upgrade for this company will be north of 20% for the year as a whole. And on that basis, I'm buying this stock on 10-ish times earnings, about a 3% yield with strong management. But why do I really want to own it? I really want to own it because I think it's going to be bought. Mm. I think Bunzl will almost certainly be doing the numbers. They bought a similar business to what McFarland is, and McFarland would multiply their position in the UK by over 1,000%. And so on that basis, if I think about Bunzl buying this stock at £1.20, at the moment it's a market cap of about 125 million. If they pay £1.25 a share, Bunzl would still get around about a 4% earnings upgrade using their balance sheet strength. And that's what Bunzl have done.
Yeah.
And so on that basis, given that Peter Atkinson, who I think is a fantastic chief exec, but the company's too prudently run in terms of forecasts for the marketplace, and he puts himself in a vulnerable position. I think there's upgrades to come, and I think the business will be bought.
Is it in one of your portfolios?
It's one of our 230 positions, yeah. it's a nice business, but you know the price is the same now as it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, probably. I've not looked back 15 years, but it's about the time that Peter Atkinson came.
Have you got that in your notes? I mean, you've got so many notes.
I've got a lot of
long-term Chelsea.
I've got a lot of notes. But the business is extremely well run. It generates cash. It's got a small pension deficit, nothing to write
home. So why is it still the same price as it was 15 years ago?
Some stocks do that. You know, some stocks. You know. I was just thinking the other day, I mean, a company that reported today, Alimask, that was the first company I ever visited when I started running the small companies fund in the start of 1989. And the share price was £4 then. And it's up 18% today to 93p. You know, people kind of forget that a lot of equities don't go anywhere. You know, timing is crucial. And, you know, now might be the right time for McFarland. It's all about, is the company growing? Is the key. Mm. You know, you buy equities for growth. And it could be growth in capital, it could be growth in dividends, which then leads to growth in capital. But it's got to be capable of growing or reinventing itself and then going to growth. You know, you can't just sit there and watch companies sort of struggle. And, you know, I'm often reminded that, you know, early 1900s, Coates Fire was the largest company in the world by market cap. Now, if you believe in reversion to the mean, you're probably going to have a very long wait, aren't you? Because is it really going to overtake Google, Microsoft and Amazon? Debatable. So, you know, you cannot actually just be stuck in a stock for and just hope it's going to get better. You've got to have, like this one, it was probably drifting, wasn't it? And then this guy's come in.
Yeah, he rescued the business. Yeah. He went through the financial crisis. He didn't really have anywhere to turn. He didn't have the currency in terms of his share price to issue stock, etc. And he started acquiring around 2015-16, when the share price in those days was about 35p. Mm. And that's when I started buying. And I've been in and out, which I often do. And I like the management. I like their market area, the secular structural growth that they have for online. And so he changed the equation. Peter Atkinson and his team changed the equation. And I think Bunzl will buy it because of what he's produced. And in rating terms, valuation, I think it's very cheap. But I concur with Andy's point about companies need to grow. Absolutely, they do.
So, Andy, which company would you cite for growth at the moment?
Well, one we've got a pretty big position in is a thing called Tremor. And it's quite interesting in this whole sort of ad tech world. You know, since I've first been involved with this company, it's changed its name to protect the innocent. You know, it's merged with something else. And so you've effectively got a concoction now of Blinks, Rhythm One, Taptica have all come together to form Tremor. And one of the problems with ad tech is, you know, you used to be writing things and then that gets disintermediated by sort of mobile or computers. And you never get a chance to actually put your roots down before being swept away by the new technology that comes into town. What they've done now with the acquisition of Rhythm One is they've actually got a platform now. They've actually got a platform which has got deep enough roots which can withstand the ongoing sort of changes in the market. Good management team, lots of cash on the balance sheet, great trading statement yesterday. And I think we're in now just for a cycle of upgrades. And I thought to myself, you know, before I came up to the 10th floor here, I'll just have a look at the Trade Desk, which is the comparable company in the States, 29 billion market cap, prospective PE 169. You know, this thing, you know, it's market cap 220 million, PE historically a 13. You know, next year it could be on five times. Now, at some point, you know, the management team are going to have to sell it potentially because however deep your roots are, you know, it's nightfall as day, there's a big storm somewhere which blows you away. You know, equities, as I said before, are for buying and selling. You know, a lot of companies, management have turned down bids and then been carried out. You know, and Richard's made a good point there about corporate activity. You know, as a house, we've got 10% of William Hill. You know, and at £1.40, people are going, it's going nowhere, is it? You know, bookies. And then suddenly sports betting takes off in the States. Management have got their early doors. Oh, it's too cheap to sell now at £2.70.
So what's the change at Tremor? Because they've had quite a torrid time over the last few years.
The change is they've effectively done enough acquisitions now to get a critical mass, especially in video advertising, which is the big growth area. They did the deal with News International, with Unruly. News International come on as a shareholder, and it's just given them a lot more content. And they've got a management team that actually seems to understand the business and is prepared to actually say, right, okay, we can grow this organically, or we can make small bolt-on acquisitions, which should just plop onto our platform and get all the benefits.
And you're not worried about advertising spend going down because of COVID?
I think what advertising spend's done is, for marketing departments, it's changed what they spend. You know, you think when Richard and I started, you know, media buyers were the sexiest area in advertising.
King. Yeah, they were king.
They were kings. They just picked up 15% on every ad on TV. You know, we were sitting there, we're all of a similar age, you know, watching, you know, the gold blend advert. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? You know, with the couple, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, advertising was just like huge in that sort of arena. Yeah. And now, you know, you turn on your phone, you might have inadvertently visited a website. And next thing you know, you're getting loads of adverts. And that's so, and actually the costs of doing that have completely changed. So that business has been, the old advertising business has been destroyed. And you only have to see what Sorrell's done walking away from the traditional advertising to its new vehicle, S4, and it's all digital. And so we're just trying to tap into that sort of digital world. You know, Sorrell, he bought that thing, Monk's Media, doesn't he?
Yes.
So he doesn't sign himself Martin Sorrell, signs himself Head Monk.
And Sorrell always said, Martin always said, that it will be technology change that will be the real risk to traditional legacy advertising houses. And he was absolutely right. Yeah. And he told me that 2005, 2006. And the world's moved on. And Tremor, yeah, it's a love or hate stock, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. But those sort of stocks I like. Because, you know, with £3 billion, you can't have a portfolio of stocks everyone loves. Yeah. Because by nature, we're going to run out of lovers, really. You know, do you know what I mean? Because then when everyone owns them, where's the marginal buying coming from? Yeah, our job is to find them before other people, let other people discover them through their performance, and then sell them when everyone loves them. You know, and I call it the Arsene, even though I'm a Spurs fan, I call it the Arsene Wenger approach to fund management, you know, because he was the one who found Thierry Henry as a winger for Juventus, turned him into a centre forward. Everyone thought he was the most amazing player. And then when he realised his ability to perform was waning, flogged him to Barcelona. And that's what we're trying to do, the Arsene Wenger School of Fund Management.
So perhaps Israeli shares become the new vogue.
Well, they could do. But, you know, as long as it's listed in London, we can invest in it. And Israel, for all its faults, does have a lot of smart people, especially in technology.
And talking about advertising, you've got something you're going to talk about, which is in the same...
We've not spoken before today, but it's interesting. It is about data. It is about the new horizons that we've got to look for and finding the business risk that we can understand. And more importantly, the financial risk attached to it. And with the valuation, how do I make money? Which is always my principal point that I make at the end of any investment case. And the future, and a year ago, I made a lot of money in Future Group. And I know Andy owns it in his mid-cap 250 fund. An amazing story. And it's similar to Future Group, but better. A lot better. Now, unfortunately, the broker, Pamir Gordon, produced a note today on Reach Group. So they got there before I did. But to be fair, I have been buying it.
Story of your life, Ellen.
Fred, they got there before me. And it's Reach Group. That is my... And I'm so overly excited about it. It's either... I'm either completely and utterly wrong or we are just going to make an obscene amount of money in this company. Market cap's about 230-odd million. A few management changes over the last few years. And what Reach is, in essence, is national newspapers. But it's not the national newspapers I'm particularly interested in. It's the regional newspapers that I'm interested in. And it's that pivotal effect into online, into digital transformation, into local news. And local news is at the forefront of COVID. And it's a transformation away from newspapers into online advertising. Now, this has been going on for some time. Mm. Of course it has. But the change has been what Andy points out, data. And the way that this new management team, highly regarded, Jim Mullen, a dour Scot, but with a real mission. And I absolutely think he's going to fix this. I'm not going to call him Jim and fix it because that would be wrong. But he has got the understanding and knowledge. He spent a lot of time in his early career at News International. He then went on to Ladbrokes. And what did he do at Ladbrokes? He took on the digital wave, the digital change at Ladbrokes. And that's where his skill is, and understanding and building up a database consumer front. And that's what Reach are going to do. And that's what they're doing at the local level with their sites. Reach is and a lot of people know this, and this is what the Pamir Gordon note writes about today. It's the fifth largest site in the UK on an amalgamated basis of all of their regional press. So this is the Liverpool Echo, Birmingham Post, Portsmouth News, etc., Telegraph, Belfast Telegraph. They've got hundreds of titles, and it's around advertising, but they're doing it by gaining an online presence, subscription base, if you want to call it that, without a cost, where people are going on and they're achieving their ID. They're attaching themselves, and therefore that's about data. Knowing who the person is, how old they are, where they live, and then giving them the app, giving the opportunity to feed them. What are they feeding them? They're feeding them content, local content, which they're not paying for. But of course, the advertisers are, because at that point, you've got to the holy grail. You've got to know who the person is, what their hobbies are, cycling in Andy's point, or maybe running. And on that, or my wife with fashion or home or insurance or their age, like I said earlier. And so consequently, they've got a footprint across the UK and they're the fifth largest online audience in the UK behind a few names that some people may have heard of called Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft and Apple. But imperatively, they own the content.
Yeah.
Google and co don't. And so what Jim Mullen's doing is he's bringing in this attachment to getting people to sign up. I call it subscription, but it's not subscription. And as long as he retains them, he'll be able to build that many times. And he's got to 3.6 million of subscribers, up from 600,000 this time last year. His target's 10 million. And remember, he'll be able to sell it lots of times because he'll get to understand who the subscriber is, who the reader is, where they live. And he'll be able to sell it many times across many different verticals, whether it's sport, home, gaming, fashion. The list goes on endlessly. And this is on a high margin business, low capital intensive, and it's a pivotal out of paper into online.
And how much of the revenue is coming from digital advertising as against the paper stuff?
Last year, it was approximately 16%. What we don't know is the margin, because Jim's not giving it away. And he's probably, and the investment's been put in to the digital online opportunity. And therefore, the drop through will be immense. The point I made earlier, being able to sell it many times, I believe it's growing. And the third quarter, they grew at 13%.
Mm.
Now, they go up against difficult comps going forward, but the transformational impact will be online. And my suspicion is by 2023, it will be approximately 50% of their revenue. But more importantly, less capital intensive. More importantly, with significantly higher margins. And this is a stock that trades on around 3x earnings.
Uh-huh.
My suspicion is that this should be on 15, 20. This is Future Group, but better. It's got a cash balance sheet, but there is oil in the ointment. Why is it only on 3x? Well, at the moment, because of its legacy businesses, print newspapers.
And it's pension fund.
Deficit. And it's the pension fund.
Do you own it, Andy?
We're the third largest shareholder.
Okay.
So Reach is a market cap of about 240 million, but it's got a pension liability of over 2.4 billion. It might be slightly larger. And the deficit, as Andy touches on, is around 260 million.
See, what's interesting is that, you know, if we look back, yeah, Wapping isn't that far away from here.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those battles with the print unions and, you know, Murdoch changing everything. And now, you know, those fiefdoms still exist. And what the pandemic has done and enabled Jim to do is to go up to all these, you know, union barons who still hang around and say, look, guys, game's over. Guys and girls, you know, we're going to have to make some changes here.
So he's cut the costs.
Yeah.
And he's fast-forwarded those cost reductions even further. But remember, he's pivoting into a new world and he's taking control. My suspicion is that urge to merge will be someone like Google will wake up and smell the coffee and realise the power of what he has. And if he gets, remember, he has an audience of 42 million people at the moment in the mm-hmm. UK, but he's got coverage of 95% of the UK, again, via the Liverpool Echo or Portsmouth News, etc., which in COVID world, we all need to know about. Mm. The first thing my wife did was she went on to Mole Valley, you know, to find out what the restrictions were for COVID-19. Now, we're going to recover out of COVID-19, almost certainly in my belief. And it will be around testing and it will be around treatment. But Reach is on a 3x PE. I think it will get re-rated to 15, 20. I think their earnings forecasts to come on top. And by February, when Jim Mullen would tell us how he's going to monetize his Reach ID, as he's going to call it, and it's 3.6 million people at the moment, and he'd be getting all that data, and he'd be getting all that juice, and he'd be able to then go to the insurers or the banks or the gaming companies and say, this is Richard Leonard, he lives in Ashted, he supports Liverpool, and he adores going on holiday. Well, do you know what?
Momentum investing there, Lenny, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit of that.
Or Liverpool.
And so on the basis of where the share price is today, and Pamela Gordon beat me to it, the share price is up 10p today. But there's a little trick in my armour here. It goes ex bonus scrip dividend tomorrow. So this afternoon, you've still got a chance to buy it because there's going to be a bonus scrip of about 4%. And the institutional buyers like Andy tomorrow won't be able to get that 4%. So I've got a little bit in my back pocket there. But the re-rating and what Jim Mullen has to produce and give us in February is how he's going to monetize these 3.6 million people today. I think it will grow to 10. I think it will grow even greater. And this is the Express, the Daily Mirror, the Sunday Mirror, the Daily Star. But more importantly, all of those regional.
But the theme is, you know, the old economy is not dead. You know, most people go, oh my God, all you got to do is, you know, buy Games Workshop. And you go, well, hold on a minute. All the performance has come in the last 3 years. 3 years ago, you didn't own it. That was the time to own it. And they go, yeah, but it's amazing. But it wasn't amazing 3 years ago, was it? No. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to invest in things that are changing. You know, change is the biggest creator, in my view, of wealth potential. And, you know, Lenny's touched on it there with reach. You know, if you said to people, you want to buy the Daily Express, you go, oh, Jesus, my mum reads that, you know. And with the headlines, you know, Brexit on the brink or whatever it is. But you say data and they go, well, you know, future, similar sort of position, but that's reinvented itself into a data-led business.
Data-led.
And, you know, and all these other old economy stocks, you look at and you go, actually, can you reinvent yourself? Oh, actually, you've got half a chance then.
Have you got another example of one that's going to reinvent itself?
Yeah, I think, you know, sort of N Brown. You know, when I started, N Brown, catalogue retailer for old people, maybe slightly large people. And you kind of go, yeah, that's a dying business, isn't it? You know, lending, selling through a catalogue. And actually, they kind of, I'm sitting at home and I'm reading the results during the lockdown and thought, hold on a minute. This company's capitalised at 100 million. Last year's EBITDA was 103 million. And hold on, you know, let's get a call with the management. 92% online. I said, yeah, but you're selling to old people, you know. How do they interact online? And the guy said, well, your mum's still alive. I said, yeah. How does she keep in touch with her grandkids? Instagram, Facebook. I went, yeah, you got a point there. Hadn't even thought about that. And then in a great source, because when Lenny and I started, there were so many analysts covering companies. Now, like Reach, a good example, one analyst, isn't it?
Complete lack of research out there. Like I mentioned with McFarland. Yeah. And I look for those types of companies because that means I can go and interrogate them and make a difference.
Yeah. So one thing I keep an eye on is bulletin boards. And you look at bulletin boards and you go, actually, there's some guy on London, the South East bulletin boards who follows M Brown and he puts up the weekly traffic stats. So you can see that, you know, Giacomo's up 70% year on year. I mean, you think, oh, yeah. So there's so much information out there. Mm. And I remember with the old dark group, there was a guy whose handle was Castleford Tiger, who must work there because he was saying, yeah, we're launching new routes or whatever. And when the shares were like a quid, he was saying, yeah, I think your shares are worth 10 quid. So, you know, it's always, the pools of information are always there, but they're in different places. You know, they're not in the broker's notes now, typically. You've got to find them yourself. You know, the internet has enabled you to assemble huge amounts of information from lots of different areas and then assimilate it and come up with a decision, you know. And
research notes in the city over the last 30 years have become less and less potent. Hmm. They are reactionary, which I think is very sad. But that's why I switched originally from being a fund manager in the 90s to a stockbroker. I wouldn't necessarily want to be a stockbroker today, to be fair. Damn hard work. But what is clearly evident is the blogs are just remarkable, where they get their information from. And which I found on a couple of that we talked about, when I know we're going to touch on Novacyt later. And I was learning more from the site, the blogging, than I was from any research analysts, because there wasn't any.
So how did Novacyt come on your radar?
Novacyt came on our radar at Trium, which is the wealth management business I work at. They came to see us a number of times and they needed recapitalising, refinancing. And we couldn't help them. And the reason we couldn't help them was because their primary...
How long ago was that?
That was in 2019. And we saw them as late as December 19. This was a company that was close to insolvent. They had to refinance. And we really wanted to help them because we thought it's a really fantastic management team with real expertise. But unfortunately, the French listing, they're 70% listed on the French market, Euronext. And as a consequence, they couldn't do a new a placing of new shares at a discount. And I wasn't interested as a consequence. And the aftermarket would almost certainly be very tight. But a fantastic management team led by Graham, and I can't remember Graham's surname, a good finance director, good market position in testing, but couldn't help them. Saw it in the lockdown, got asked to look at it. I thought there was still a finance problem, so I didn't touch it. Then my wife and I wanted to go away to Cyprus. And she told me that the testing to go away to Cyprus to get the air pass would be approximately £300 a ticket, which shocked me. So I'm in my sitting room just looking up testing, and Novasight's brand came bouncing off at me. And I thought, I know this company.
When was that?
That was mid-September. And so in mid-September, the share price at this time was about £4. I knew the company because they'd come to see us a number of times. I wasn't aware of the results were pending. And their interim results came out on the 17th of September. Oh my goodness, when I looked at the numbers, they came up with 72 million of revenue against the previous half of 7. And they did 64 plus million in their second quarter. And they won a massive contract for testing with the NHS in May. You started to do some numbers and you realised there was no forecast out there, so you had to go blind. I got phoned up by Numis, who are almost certainly the number one broker in the small cap, mid cap arena. They've taken on the brokership. And I spoke at length to the corporate broker. And the realisation was that they were in prime position. And they're in prime position because they've got best in class for their test. They had, luckily, a man in Wuhan. And he phoned up London HQ, said, there's a problem here.
And January.
In January. And HQ got on top of it very quickly. It's a fantastic management team that we've gone and done some real work on. And so they've built scale before. And this is, after all, about scale. Mm-hmm. They can do 1,000 doses, tests, and manufacture them and distribute them. Now, they've undoubtedly had help from external parties to help them get up to speed. But they sell a test about $10 a piece. And that's direct from the company, by the way. So it is $10 a piece. So whatever the blogs think it is, it's $10 a piece. And then they've got the machinery testing machines to do it. And theirs are the Q16 and Q32. And they've won additional contracts on top of that. They deal with 132 countries around the world. I'll give you an example. Zimbabwe, $25 million contract. Cha-ching. Hungary, $20 million contract.
How is Zimbabwe going to pay? Have you thought about that?
Dollars.
Yeah.
They paid in dollars.
What, Zimbabwe dollars?
No, in US dollars. So, incredibly difficult to measure. Fantastic management team, built it in scale before, will do it again. The difficulty is valuing it.
And how are you valuing it?
I'm just simply doing it off cash generation. My forecast, these are Richard Leonard forecasts, Trium forecasts. We think they'll do 350 million of turnover this year, and they do EBITDA of between 210 and 240.
Is that what Numis are saying as well?
No, I think Numis are at 300 million and EBITDA of 200. I don't know what expenditure they're likely to spend on the business, so I'm somewhat guessing there, but I think they do 240 million. Next year's more exciting. Why is it more exciting? Because there's a game changer. And if you look at the share price, it's done three vertical lifts, which is quite shocking. You know, I started buying it at around £3.80, £4. Today it's 10, 11. It might be 12 as we're talking. The game changer is the Winter Plex product. And if they win that, I think they will win contracts with that product in lots of France. It's basically to distinguish between whether you've got a normal cold.
Yes.
Right. There's four main types of corona, of which Corona 19 is one of the four. And if...
Well, the other ones, 18, 17 and 16, aren't they?
Probably. They're years, to be fair, Andy. They're vintages. But you're right. You're right, in effect. It's distinguishing, differentiating between whether you've got COVID-19 or whether you've just got a common cold. And that's imperative if you're going to get the economies to reopen. And so the Winterplex, if they win contracts with that product, it's a game changer. It will be a game changer. I think ultimately it will get acquired. They've got very good close relationships with people like Glaxo. And if they get the Q16 and Q32 PCR machines out into the marketplace, into nursing homes, GP surgeries, etc., you won't be able to value this company.
And what happens after COVID, sort of 2-3 years out?
A question mark. I don't know. And therefore, that's why I'm simply valuing it off cash. I believe that the cash at bank will be over 400 million in the middle of next year. And by the end of next year, December 2021, probably be between 400 and 800. So let's call it 600. And I'm valuing it instinctively, because I do a lot of things instinctively after all. I'm valuing it on 1.5 times cash. So on that basis, I think, you know, the turn of the year, this stock could be worth over £1 billion.
Not that far off now, is it?
70 million shares in issue. So it's going that way. But there's a game changer.
Yeah.
And we haven't had the game changer yet.
Have you played COVID at all?
Not really. It's enlightened on companies I own. You know, it could be EKF or Immunodiagnostics. It's like one of these areas, and we were talking about earlier on me, you know, in my view, it's like a bit like the millennium bug, you know, the tech boom. And sometimes we get lucky and we're in areas where everyone's going to sort of arrive, you know, like a Games Workshop or whatever. And sometimes you look at areas and you go, right, okay, have I got the bandwidth to play that? Not really. You know, and I'd have to buy probably 5 or 6 of these things. And what I don't know is what everyone else in the world's doing, you know, in terms of, there's just a huge amount of money, probably nothing really seen like this in terms of the amount of money that's been thrown, not just the economies, but finding a testing cure. You know, every company has come up with, it could be TT, the old industrial company, says, oh yeah, we've got this product, shares go up 40%. You know, I've never known a time since the tech boom where just a sniff of, well, you do that for COVID? Oh, fantastic. You know, and people then assume it's been trialled, it's been tested, and it works. You know, sounds like an oversight. Hats off to all the people who own it have done that. But where we are, and we've talked about earlier about the differences, sometimes we just have to let things go. Mm. And say, you know what? It's on the AIM market. It's not on an index. I'm not going to get killed. And if, you know, sure as eggs are eggs, I'll buy it, and that'll be the peak. Because people go, hold on, they don't win that contract. And then, actually, what do they do then? Mm. So
that's another excitement, though, because when Novacyt gets a prime listing and has to go into the 250, Andy will have to look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Is it going to switch? It's still quite on Euronext, isn't it?
It's listed on both exchanges. It's AIM listed, and they couldn't raise the money because it was French listed and they couldn't do it at a discount. And that's how I got to know Novacyt, and I met the management. And they found the right test. There's only 2 accredited tests in the world, and they're one of them. And there's only 5 on the World Health Organization's list. If the Winterplex product comes through, it's a game changer. I don't know how to value it at that point. And I suspect the market won't have to value it either. I suspect Glaxo will work it out and say, OK, you're pregnated across the world with your razor blade. And they bought the razor blade manufacturer. So they protected their IP that they didn't, the IP that they didn't own. And so once that happens, I've got no idea how you value it. I honestly don't know how to value it. And I've been very careful not to sell that many of the shares I own, even to the point where I started buying some of them back. And that rarely happens. Ask Andy, how many times has he bought back a share that he sold lower down?
Yeah, that's
very hard.
So we might do a Novacyt special next week with Lenny. He's agreed to do that because I think we could go on about this for another few hours. But we now ought to move on to some questions because it's difficult to believe, but this is live and we have got people that are asking questions. There was one pre-sent in, which is for you, Andy, which is the SCM UK Smaller Companies Trust has over 50 holdings. holdings. Why don't you offload, say, half less successful holdings and invest the proceeds in either a few of your winners, like Games Workshop, or a few COVID winners?
Well, interesting question. So, you know, we've probably got 100 holdings in that fund. Now, I tend to spend more time, you know, selling things that have gone up and then buying things that have gone down, you know, because history tells me that, you know, getting into the mid 250 index or getting into the FTSE 100 is as good as it gets for a lot of companies. And I look at these things and say, you know, we probably, this is an unparalleled time, would you agree, Lenny, where winners have kept winning. You know, in our investment career, normally the winners win for a while, then competition comes in and takes their market share. And so, you know, it's been a freaky sort of period. And I think people just think that those that have won are going to win forever. And those that have lost are going to lose forever. And I just think we're in a bit of a sea change now. So I'm spending more time looking at the losers saying, can you reinvent yourself? If you can't, then you're out. But if you can, then like a Reach or whatever, you could make 3, 4, 5 times your money, which you might not do in a lot of these things that have gone up already.
Mm. They're cornered stocks, aren't they? Mm. They're cornered stocks, whether it's a Rentokil, which we talked about, which is a fantastic company, subscription revenues, brilliantly run all around the world. It's 42.5 earnings. I mean, it's on drugs. You can't make money from that. Whereas if you find a diamond in the rough, you find something like a Reach Group, which I think will be £1.50 by February, March, I think it will ultimately be worth £4.50 and more. And even potentially that, on top of that, that urge to merge, you know, Google will almost certainly at some point need to own content. Mm. And so the opportunity, Andy's absolutely, that's a great discipline to sell things that are out of your remit, because why does he want to take that risk?
Mm. But also, you've got to remember, you know, you can love a stock, but it can't love you back. Yeah. So everyone loves Games Workshop. Everyone, you know, everyone loves, you know, like Novacyt. They love these things, and then they convince themselves and other people around them that actually they're completely right. And but after a while, you run out of lovers, don't you? Yeah, I'm not speaking from personal experience here. And but you run out of lovers, and then who's left to buy the shares?
Yeah,
you know, we want to buy a share. You know, that Arsene Wenger approach that hasn't yet been discovered. You know, that everyone's then going to fall in love with.
So someone here's asking about Ted Baker. I see that Schroders has done a cheeky trim from 11% to 10.99 and this month. Why would you sell such a small amount?
Have we done that? I don't think we have. Or maybe
it may just be the percentages have changed.
Maybe one of my team has sold them, but I think I'm in Ted Baker for the long haul. I think between us and the largest shareholder, we've got circa 40%, I think.
I think it's an amazing... Yeah. It has the most amazing potential, as we spoke last time. And I had that conversation with the finance director and Rachel Osborne. What a fantastic management team, you know, to get in to try and rescue Ted Baker. And they've also now got Ray Calvin alongside with his amazing input, you know, design input as well. And the cost restructuring and the opportunity that they have to repivot into the online world is fantastic. I don't know whether they make it or not, but it's got to be one of the best opportunities in terms of a recovery story.
Yeah, it came to the market at about £1.25, probably fell to 75p. We bought 15% of the company.
I sold the stock to you.
Yeah, well, 15% of the company. We sold it at 15 quid. Ray Kelvin said that Andy Bruff's an absolute idiot, right? And this is just, I remember his words, this is just the start. Shares get to £30. Everyone loves it, you know, walking on water. And then we refinance it at 75p. You know, that's what, as we said before, you know, shares are for buying and selling.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's knowing and understanding the companies, as he, you know, as Andy clearly does with Ted Baker.
And somebody asked here, what's the difference between Reach and Johnson Press?
Johnson Press is almost certainly bust. It's got significantly, it's over-leveraged. What I mean by that is simply too much debt. What Johnson Press didn't, and Johnson Press was an absolute darling of the stock market in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And the reason was because of local press. Now, the local press world is changing and it's being fast-forwarded by COVID. And it's a very strong question, because what's the difference? The difference was they never invested in online. Reach did. And Simon Fox, the previous management team, deserve a lot of credit for actually realising that, one, they had to invest in online, and two, that they had to cut the costs of the legacy paper business, print business, which Andy mentioned earlier.
I mean, when I joined Schroders in 87, I was the media analyst. I joined from Pricewaterhouse, and I was the media analyst. And regional newspapers were the stock market darlings because they had a monopoly in their own area.
Correct.
And so they could put their price up.
Correct.
Yeah. And the only places you could advertise jobs, cars and properties. And then they got lazy and they thought, how are we going to attack each other? I know, we'll launch free newspapers and we always deliver those after school, the first 10 houses, and then throw them in the ditch somewhere with everyone else's.
Yeah. You did that too.
Yeah, exactly. and then, of course, the properties went to Rightmove, the cars went to Auto Trader and the jobs went to LinkedIn. But they never, Johnson Press never embraced the data. They thought they just keep buying things and they end up with more debt in the third world country.
I mean, that question, in effect, is another reason why you buy Reach, because Reach have put the investment in to the online world. So they can now accelerate out. And again, if you go on to Reach's website, you'll see their titles. And they've got their own portals as well. They've got their own recruitment, etc. And they can do it because they've got the tentacles in the regional areas of the UK. And that's where the attachment is. It's not actually online for the nationals. So, look, the Daily Mail is an amazing paper if you read the Daily Mail. I don't.
The sort of list of shame on the side. Don't see that.
And so the opportunity is the attachment into the local regional areas and the difference between Johnson Press and Reach, Trinity Mirror, as I once called it, and I was broker to Trinity back in the late 90s.
You can tell he's a broker. I mean, I'm itching to finish this show and go and buy some more. I mean, he's already convinced me.
And well, you'll have to pay over 90p, which is good. But I want to get back. I want to get back and buy more as well. But the real problem is, how does Jim monetize it? And so he's got that opportunity. Johnson Press don't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm.
So moving back to Novacyt, do you think they should move to the main market or even to NASDAQ?
I don't think they'll have the chance.
Because?
They'd be bought. They'd be bought either because of their cash, their market position. I believe the Winterplex will be a game changer, into potentially the French market. Just think about this. If you want to go to the cinema, now, I know you own Cineworld, but...
No, don't anymore.
Oh, I see, sorry. I just don't think the mass market will be there anymore for cinemas. I think streaming and online, the Netflix of the world, etc., will change that environment completely. And yes, you can go to the cinema, but it will be a Rolls-Royce experience. And you will pay the price for it. A ticket in the UK to the Odeon was probably between £7, £8, maybe more. And they then got the great gross margin through the confectionery, etc. I think the cinemas are for the birds now going forward, and the box office. Yes, there'll be boutique-type cinemas, but it won't be mass cinemas. And so...
We were talking about Novacyt.
Yeah, we're just talking about Novacyt. And so ultimately, I think...
I didn't realise they did cinemas as well.
Yeah, I strongly believe Novacyt will be bought. It will be bought because of the changing product it has with Winterplex. And the opportunity will be so you can go to mass audience venues.
That's where we're going.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Football stadiums.
Oh, get your notes out again.
Yeah, I have written a lot of notes, Andy.
With Novacyt is asking about the competitive threats.
There's always going to be a competitive threat. And it's a great question. But the way I would answer that, it's already there. Novacyt are already there. They've got the accredited test. So one, you've got the barrier to entry. But two, you've got first mover advantage. And after all, we believe... Yeah. That this virus at some point will dissipate. This market's not going to be around forever. What will be around, though, is their market position. What will be around is their Q16s and Q32s in the GPs, etc. And you will need to test whether you've got COVID-19 or whether you've got a cold. It's the product changer. If I'm wrong, I'll still make money. If I'm right, I'll make an obscene amount of money.
Andy, one last question for you on Boohoo and their auditors. What comments do you have on that?
Well, as an ex-auditor myself, whether you ever really stop being an auditor, but you know, it's quite interesting is that, you know, when I started, accountants would audit anything. And it's just it's now reflects the sea change that we're seeing in the whole finance world, where the move to ESG, the whole governance thing, you know, the fact that, you know, our investors don't want us to own, you know, oil and gas shares or whatever. You know, governance and the sustainability are absolutely top of any agenda when it comes to investing. And, you know, the auditors are just a chink, a link in the old financial system. And they're saying, hold on a minute. You know, even though there's companies, you know, Boohoo, fantastic success story under Mahmood and Carol, cash on the balance sheet, the auditors have said, we don't need the reputational risk. And to me, you know, we saw that with Sports Direct, et cetera, and you kind of think, well, actually, they're putting reputational risk above financial risk. You know, companies, Pricewaterhouse or whoever, quite happy to audit Carillion and Polly Peck in the past, et cetera. But now they're really worried about reputational risk. And I think it's going to be quite tough for whoever takes it on. And I think it's just Ernst Young in the frame.
So are auditors morally bankrupt?
You're talking about me? What are we talking about?
Not yet. not at this meeting.
Well, it's an interesting point. You know, and we're going to know relatively soon whether the government's going to force one of them to do it.
Interesting.
Because if I flick it around the other, would you invest in Boohoo at this point?
I don't invest in Boohoo because it's on the AIM market. But I think Mahmood's a great businessman. But you've got to actually work out, you know, they paid for their investigation into the supply chain. Do we need another independent sort of approach to it? It's, you know, the trouble with sustainability is how far do you go back? You know, all this government, ESG, do you go back to all the factories? Did they have to have the, like, the Novasite sign off or whatever? And then we'll invest accordingly. What does that mean for margins? Mm. So, you know, ESG is transforming the landscape, not just for us, but also for everyone linked in to the whole.
But can any fund invest in it? Because now with the ESG smelliness around it, are they going to feel okay to do so?
Well, that stands as the individual fund manager, you know. But there were a lot of ESG funds who owned Boohoo because the shares were performing so well.
Mm. And then Standard Life actually sold on that basis. Mm. The other way, flicking it around, is what about the other companies that we need to look at relative to ESG, relative to the auditors?
Yeah.
And then most of them are on AIM.
Yeah.
Well, does defence become the new tobacco, for example? People say, well, we can't invest in defence companies.
Well, lots of people can't, to be fair.
Final question for you, Andy. Where do you get your shirts from, someone's asking?
Well, actually, this is a present. So, yeah, I didn't choose this one, but I quite like it, actually.
I like it, too.
You're meant to say Ted Baker, I should think.
No, it's a bit out of market for Ted Baker.
I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. Thank you again, Andy and Lenny, and to you all for joining. Stay well and have a good afternoon.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.